Welcome to Comics,
episode 208. This week, we talk about... Can't we talk about something more pleasant? Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes. See what we're reading next. Send us a message. Or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now...
Sure. So last night was game night, right? And David, you're not part of the story because you weren't there, but it was game night.
And I was.
No, and we were all sitting out in my sunroom, playing Magic the Gathering because it's game night. And my wife comes in and she's just like shooting the shit a little bit. And then she says, "Oh yeah, Andrew, what is that naked woman comic by the bed in our bedroom?" And I'm like, of course, my first reaction was, what? Which one? Not to say that there are piles and piles of naked woman comics I'm stashing near the bed, but, like, which comic? Because, I mean, there's a thing with comics where, like, you could, like, get offended by Power Girl's costume, even though that's not a quote-unquote naked woman comic. So, like, there's a huge range of what falls under naked woman comic. Like, Ms. Marvel, before the Captain America, or before the Captain Marvel costume change, was that naked? Because that's, like, all legs. Like, what was Naked Woman? And she's the one with the naked woman. The woman who's, like, naked. There's, like, nothing on her but, like, her underwear. And I'm like, Red Sonja? And she says, yes, that one. And she says, thankfully, you had the dignity to face it away from the room in case my family came over. But, like, I get that point, but also... My wife really loves strong women in comics, and I mean that in, like, the literal way. She likes watching, like, she loves Peggy Carter and Black Widow and shit like that. And, like, Red Sonja, the comic written by Gail Simone, would be right up her alley. Right up her alley. But, of course, like, the barrier to entry immediately is there's a naked woman on the cover. Not literally naked, but practically naked.
I mean, I can see that, because I think... I could see how someone would look at that cover and, like, just not assume that that's a strong female character.
Yeah.
Right? So, or,
like, because it's 100% male gaze every cover.
Yeah.
Especially the ones that I choose to pick up because I'm a male and I have a male gaze. But, I mean, they have really good variant covers and stuff. And it's just, I don't know. So that was fun.
No, I sympathize.
Naked woman by your bed. Because now I'm thinking, she actually would like that. I would love to get her to start reading that, because it's fun. It's a good, fun comic. But, like, now, it's going to be tough.
Not just hand it to her and be like, no, really, you'll like it.
No, really, it's Gail Simone. You love her, I swear. She was a hairdresser. It's a thing.
Was she a hairdresser?
Yeah, she was a hairdresser when she started doing the Women in Refrigerators, when she started that site. She was just a hairdresser. And then DC was like... Oh, you're right, and you're actually a good writer. Come work for us.
Oh, that's neat. I was not aware of that.
Yeah, she just did it like as a casual thing, and then they were like, "Come write comic books for us." Okay, cool.
That's like actually really neat. I don't know, like that
she was discovered.
Well, also just I don't know. There's something about having what I guess I guess I view these things as two fairly disparate skills. And, like, the more strange skills someone has, the more I'm fascinated by them. Right? Like I would think, oh, you know, maybe she was an artist or something, or a writer, or... it's something... Not that hair styling is not creative. It just... Like, that seems like two worlds collide to
it's
me.
It's totally not a comic book writer.
Yeah, it just seemed, it's really fascinating to me. I like that.
So the other thing I got to bring up is we missed a week. Okay, I don't think we actually missed a week of the episode coming out. We might have. Yeah, we did miss a week of the episode coming out. I need to apologize for that. It's because my house is getting fumigated. So we had to evacuate, and the whole thing was tented up for termites for like 2 nights. And I was at my sister-in-law's, and they're wonderful people, and I like going there and visiting and staying there, but their internet is just horrendous. I tried to maintain a Skype call that was like 30 seconds long, and it dropped twice. So there was no way we're going to be able to record from there, so we had to just skip the week, and I need to apologize that for everybody up front. Because we make a contract with our listeners. We say, you come, you listen, we will make sure that we put out an episode every week for you, whether it's a comic you care about or not. And we had to break that contract last week just for stuff out of my hands, and I feel really, really bad for that. So there, you guys ready for this week's comic?
Sure.
All right.
Yes. This week's comic.
This week we read Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant by Roz Chast. I was really, last week was kind of a downer, and I thought that the topic of this one would be a little bit more of an upper, but it was totally another downer. I feel like the graphic novels portion of our Best of 2014 is like the Emmys and the finalists for Best Picture are all like these indie art things that you just like need to soldier up before you go watch them. Like, cheer up because you're in for a downer. Precious. Oh god, no, I'm not watching that ever.
I've never seen that.
All I know is it's really depressing.
It's really good, it's really depressing.
Yeah,
so.
I'm not watching that. It's too depressing.
I like depressing things.
Well then, did you like this comic?
I did. I actually really like it when I read something and it leaves me really unhappy. No, really. I view this as a great trait in a piece of media where if I engage in it and then I walk away feeling like really strongly like miserable, generally because of something that happened to the characters, that's good. Like if I'm miserable because I want that hour of my life back or whatever, that's no good. That doesn't cut it. But if, like, the occurrences in the media make me really unhappy, I'm totally satisfied.
So then you're one for catharsis in your media.
I suppose, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I like depressing things.
I mean, I appreciate catharsis a lot of the time. I don't know. Maybe it's something about the medium that I never expect it from comics like this. And there's things like Underwater Welder, which give you a feeling of catharsis, but don't feel as downery as this one. Actually, you know, this one wasn't very downery until the last couple pages, and I think it was the pages where she had just drawn her mother on her deathbed, and it was just like, what was it, 7 or 8 drawings of just that. And that's when, like, the first couple pages, those, like, page after page after page of that, you kind of go through, like, you, as the reader, go through an emotional thing flipping through those pages that first you're just like, this is kind of sad, and then you're like, well, there's kind of a beauty in it, and then there's back to, like, coping with it and being sad, and, like, you go through something going through those pages that are just those portraits. And that worked amazingly well in the end. That was a wonderful way to just kind of finish out that story, just being like, there's only so many words I can say, and you just need to see. You need to see what this is.
Yeah, and I feel like the art shifted for that, too. I mean, it was life drawing, and it was very heavy in impact when she did that. Because I think some of the tone of, like, the sadness was lightened a little by the cartoony art. You know, like, the dad is drawn looking really neurotic, and the mom looks really grumpy, right? It's caricatured. And then suddenly you get this very realistic portrayal, and it's just, I think it's emotionally very heavy right there.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big build-up to that, too, because so much of this comic does a really good job of playing between the grief and all of the struggles around the fact that her parents are moving on, and that's balanced against all of the comedy that she injects throughout this whole thing about their relationship and them as people too. Like from the very beginning, it's like she's taking playful jabs at them
Yeah, and, like, oh, this was, I feel, brutally honest, too. And I'm guessing, I don't know much of her body of work, but this seems like the type of thing that you can write and draw, like, only after your parents are dead.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Like, I would never say these things, like, for fear that my parents might see them, right? Because people don't want accurate portrayals of themselves.
Yeah, and these portrayals are, they're brutally honest in all the ways that you can identify, like, especially with her talking about her mother and her father and her relationship with them, like how she fears her mother, you know, and how she might not have, she got that confession from her mother about when she got lost and her mother hit her and hit her harder than she should have, and that maybe that's why she always feared her mother's temper. And it's like, those moments are scary for her and for the reader. And they're like, that's also where the honesty comes from. But on the flip side, that temper is part of what Roz Chass admired about her mother, because that's where her mother got her strength, which she's constantly praising. And like, through the course of the story, you see that these people are double-sided coins, and that, like, the caricature is a little bit, but they're still, you can get an awesome sense of the human beings that they were when they were alive.
Yeah, and what I really liked about this is I mean, of course, I do not know her, I do not know her parents, but it felt very fair. Like, there was a really good assessment of, these are what I see as their faults, these are the things that drive me nuts, these are the things that I respect, and these are the things that I view as faults but maybe are actually faults with me. And, like, there was a lot of introspection in this comic, too, that I really appreciated. Because, like, when she talks about her mom, you know, she also says, like, she didn't have that close relationship with her mother. But, you know, some of that may be on her, too. And she's realizing, like, well, if there was a time to become close with her, it's not now. Like, why am I trying now? Like, she kind of turns that critique on herself. So it doesn't, it doesn't feel mean in any way, the thing she's saying about her parents. It just feels like she sees it this way, and that's what she's telling.
Yeah, and that moment was one of my, it's weird to say favorite, but that was like, that moment was one that really came out and hit me when I was there, when she was like trying to get to know her mother better as a person and not just as mom, when her mother was like in that bed at the home, and she realized it's too late. I'm not going to ever have that relationship with my mother. I'm not going to know her that way. And it's just, even if it was possible, it won't be now. And it can't now. Like, oh, that's rough. Because I get tinges of that. My parents are a little bit older than my friend's parents. I think in much the similar way that Roz's parents are a little bit older. And you get those moments when, like, you start to realize that your parents are not going to live forever. Like, my mother had a problem with her hip, and it was what I had always conceived of as being an old person problem with her hip. And I had that, like, moment of, like, oh, fuck. Man, I really need to get to know my parents on a personal level and make them a bigger part. Like, that sense of urgency of, like all this stuff Roz goes through in here, like, I got a little small piece of. And I can only imagine what it was like amplified. And this comic does a great job of getting that sense of urgency and self and relationship and all of that in here.
Yeah, it's, I really like the timing, I guess, is what I'm thinking here. Because, like, she starts out and she talks about, like, she never visits them and they're still fairly able. And then by the time, you know, they're, like, getting very on in years, she's, like, seeing them multiple times a week, bringing them groceries, you know. And it's not that she's seeing them because she wants to, it's because they need her help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more of duty and, I don't know, just kind of being responsible than it is creating emotional ties at that point.
And those visits aren't, like, she writes about those visits, but those visits aren't expounded upon because they're not really important, you know? They're just like, hi, I'm here, dropping off the groceries, okay, bye. You know? And so she does talk about how she's going there more often, but they're not like significant visits that grow their relationship in any way, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, even then you get the sense that, like, this is slipping away from her. Ah, so, it's like so good and so depressing. Like, it's so on point that it's harsh.
Yeah. It's kind of, Andy said, like, he kind of had that moment with his parents. And, like, this comic and what Andy just said is, like, really opposite for me. Because my dad is, like, the eternal pessimist. He's, you know, he's, like, not that old. And he is just always like, well, I'm going to die soon. So, you know, or I'm going to get really old soon. I'm going to get dementia soon. I'm going to have a heart attack soon. And it's like, no, he's actually doing pretty well. Right? Like, but every conversation, you know, there's like this hint of pessimism. And then sometimes he's outright just like, well, I'm going to die really soon. So, you know, you got to be prepared for that. Like, okay.
I mean, I guess it's all a matter of perspective. If he's like, well, I'm not 20 anymore, so I'm closer to the side of dying soon.
No, he's just like, I'm going to be dead by the time I'm 60. It's like, no, that's not going to happen.
You'll be fine. We're not in the Wild West. It's okay.
You know, I think that this comic in a general sense is the reality for a lot of people now. I remember as when my paternal grandparents were deteriorating, as this comic describes them, it resonated a lot. And now I see my mom going through this kind of thing with her parents. They live in Sacramento, which is about 2.5 hours from where we live here in San Jose. And, I don't live with my mom, but she also lives in San Jose. And, you know, she goes every other weekend to Sacramento. She drives up there just because she wants to take care of her parents, and they refuse to move, and they don't want help to come into the house because my grandfather is like the mother, like Roz's mother.
Okay.
And then my grandma is kind of like her father in that she's kind of like, you know, she just kind of does her own thing and is kind of forgetful and stuff. And it's just this whole, like, reading this comic was very resonant with what I've seen of my grandparents. And like, this totally reminds me of my paternal grandmother, because she ended up in a place, you know? And she was in an assisted living place for a long time, and then the money ran out, and she had to go to a nursing home. And it was funny because when she was in the assisted living place, she had, this was after my grandfather died. They lived in their own house until my grandfather passed away, and then my grandmother moved to assisted living. And she would always talk about how the people who came and took care of the room, like the staff, were like stealing things from her and stuff like that. And, you know, she was like super paranoid while she was in the assisted living place. And then it got to a point where she couldn't take care of herself anymore. She needed to be in a nursing home, and she moved to a nursing home, and, you know, her mental acuity was deteriorating at a pretty rapid pace. And, but she was really happy there. I don't know why the change of scenery. To me, the nursing home seemed a lot shittier than the assisted living place. But because it was just like it was described in this comic, the assisted living place was super expensive, and it was like, but the building looked like a Spanish villa. You know?
Yeah. That's a pretty common theme.
And, you know, there was carpets, and the place had its own hair salon for like the little old ladies to get their hair done. And my grandmother basically had an apartment, you know.
Yep.
The only thing that made it not a real apartment was it didn't have a full size kitchen, but otherwise it would have been like a one bedroom apartment, a pretty nice one too. And then the assisted living place, she had a room, you know, that opened up into a hallway that was full of other rooms. And, you know, there was a common dining area where they all ate together, but it was weird. You know, I saw when I visited my grandmother in the nursing home, she seemed a lot happier. Maybe she actually liked the new place, or she just didn't know what was going on. You know, like by that point, she thought I was my dad, which was very interesting. But this is just, like, I don't know what it is. Because nobody really talks about this, just like this comic. I mean, it's called
Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant?
More pleasant. Nobody talks about these kinds of things until you're confronted with them. One of the things my grandmother would often say when she was in these homes and stuff was that she would always tell me, don't ever get old. Because it's like, you know, when she was still with it, like mentally, she would say that often, because I don't know, she was just, I think she was aware of her deteriorating state at that point. And she was like, you know, just like in this comic, she would just get more frail, and then one day she just didn't wake up, you know. And so that was that. It was like it's really surreal. Like now, like when she, you know, when she passed away, I was really sad. But looking back on it, it reminds me, like it just parallels this comic in a million ways. Like I have a box in my garage full of her stuff. You know, it's like pictures and. There's this kind of creepy doll that has clothes on that she made. It's not like a disturbing looking doll. It's just like a baby. It's like a baby doll, and it's like hyper realistic kind of. And my grandmother or her daughter, my aunt, one of them knitted the clothes the baby's wearing. And you know, it's in my garage, and it's like, I don't know what to do with this doll, you know. It doesn't feel right to, like, donate it to Goodwill or something, but I don't have any, like, it's in the garage, right? It's not like I have it up in the house somewhere. So.
It's so funny, though. So many of those moments you're talking about are in this comic in a way that, like, I connect to, too. Like, you were, like, the stuff being everywhere, and she was just like, there's just so many things, and what do you keep, and what do you do with it? Like, do you, like you're saying, what do you display it in the house? But it's something that they made, that they had, that they did. And, like, she took pictures of, like, their home and put those pictures in this, and you're like, yeah, this is all just, like, junk. This is just old junk. And, like, you kind of want to keep it because it's junk that has been in your life for as long as you've been alive. But what are you going to do with it? Like, it's junk.
Yeah, it's people's junk, right?
Yeah.
But it's not my junk. So there's like not the same level of nostalgia or there's the same connection, right? And so, you know, it's just like, you know, like I said, I see my mom dealing with this with her parents now. And, you know, my mom's not, like, old. My mom's pretty active.
No, your mom's
still
awesome.
But she is in her 60s, right? And so, at some point, this is going to be something that I'll have to deal with. And it just seems like I don't know how I'm going to handle the situation. I feel like I'm not adult enough right now to even understand.
That's my exact yes.
I'm in my early 30s, right? I'm not young. I mean,
we're not
young,
grown up.
But
we're not of the age where this should be something that matters to us, mm-hmm. like our parents, you know? Like, that's why it's so surprising that this comic hits home for us in our age. Like, you're right. The target demographic for this comic should be somebody 20 to 30 years older than us.
Well,
but
it sounds like, oh, sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, but it's such a universal thing. Exactly like you were saying, David, like, nobody talks about it. I don't talk about this with my parents. Like, do I want to give this comic to my parents? Kind of, because they both have lost parents, and they would appreciate and understand reading this, but I don't want to be like, so, Dad, you're getting old, and I'm worried you're going to have Alzheimer's. This is what my experience is getting. Like, I don't want it to be like that.
Yeah, like, I have a coworker who she's about the same age as my mom, a couple years younger, and her mother is in a assisted living community nearby, and in her mid-90s, and like she talks to me about this kind of, she talks to me about the stuff that's going on with her mom, and it's exactly the same as this comic.
Yep.
Even down, like, she's Jewish too, so it's like even like down to that level it's the same. And like
it's so weirdly universal, and we just do not talk about it.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's like it's insanely expensive, right? But
yes.
and then at the same time, it's like, can we as a society do something else for our parents or for the elders in our community? Are the things that we're doing the right things? I mean, you don't. You want to keep them comfortable and stuff, but
that stuff is super complicated.
You can't,
I weirdly get to see two different versions of how cultures do with aging, because my wife has worked in the healthcare field for a long time at a place, and now she works at an in-home place. So, like, if you need to go to a place but you refuse to go to a place, they will send people to your home.
She specializes in elder care, right?
Yes, yeah, she does. So I get to know it from that side, and, like, her place that she worked at is one of the nicest communities in our area, and it is real expensive.
Yeah, like, it's funny. My son's preschool is across the street from place where your wife worked, and they went on a field trip there.
Yeah.
And apparently the people living there loved seeing all these little 3-year-olds come and, like, do crafts with them and stuff.
But you think about it, so it's not just that they're paying for rent. They're paying for rent and food, and that's everything we know how to quantify. But, like, my wife ran a transportation. So if you need to go to a place, but you also need to go to your doctor's office, but you're not well enough to drive a car, they provide the car and somebody to drive the car and chauffeur you back and forth. And they do that not just for your doctor's appointments, but they'll do it for, like, outings and events out in town. And so then you're talking transportation, coordination for all of that. And, like, it's not just that these places are expensive because they provide, like doctor care or nurse care plus room and board, but there's, like, so many different levels of, like, every part of their life is taken care of at these places, and they're so expensive, and that's such a burden on the family, and it makes you wonder if there's another better way to do it. And I get to be privy to an alternative. My wife is also Indian, and in the Indian culture, it's considered completely forbidden. Like, you will be an outcast if you put your elders into a place. It is, no, you just do not do that. It's seen as a massive, massive sign of disrespect. And because there's such the expectation that the children will take care of the parents when the parents age. And it's such an expectation to the fact that, like, my in-laws have no retirement. They have no insurance. They are completely dependent upon my wife's family and now my family, too. And that's the way that their culture is, because they spent your youth taking care of you. So now that they are elder, you get to spend your adulthood taking care of them. And then when you get older, your kids will do the same for you. That's the expectation of the culture. So the nice thing is that you get to spend every part of that person's life with you. Like, it gets rid of that cost, right? That financial cost. But it's still such a burden. I mean, maybe not necessarily financially, but that person, if that person gets Alzheimer's, you can't put them in a hospital under that culture. Even that's tough to do. And then you have to care for them, and then you get in-home care, or you have to stay home and take care of them. And so, like, as Americans, I think we've financially offloaded that onto somebody else. We've been like, capitalism, I'll pay you to take care of my parents. You know?
Yeah, and it's kind of.
Kind of, I mean, yeah, but I think just what this comic also kind of confronts you with is just that when you get near the end, your body doesn't work, you know? And, like, her mother and father for a while were sharp enough and were there, but their body wouldn't do the things that their mind wanted them to do. And when that happens, they become the burden, and they know it. And that's, like, that's the difficult thing, is when your parents get to the point where they can't take care of themselves, and they have to rely on you. And there's just, like, I don't know, there's difficulty and shame, and there's so many emotions wrapped up in the relationship when that happens that it's so awkward and uncomfortable. That's what you don't talk about. I mean, the dying is the one thing, but I think it's that stage that you just do not talk about. And that's what this comic talks about really well, amazingly.
Yeah, definitely. But I think also, like, part of what we don't talk about is, like, the author, you know, kept saying, well, I had my own kids to take care of. They were home. I need to deal with that. You know, I have a job. And it's that, you know, in American society, like, there's no expectation that you'll care for your elders like that, really. So the thing is, like, you aren't equipped, right? Like, you're just, like, probably a nuclear family. You have maybe a couple, and then their kids, and kind of it turns into, well, you know, who's going to quit their job to take care of mom? That kind of stuff. So, like, you know, then she deals with that issue, too, which is a thing we don't talk about. Like, you know, do you have an obligation to take care of your parents personally? Or do you just have an obligation to help with their finances? Do you have an obligation to devote, you know, a shit ton of your money to keeping them comfortable? And those are really difficult things to deal with because, well, you know, people, we owe our parents a great debt. You know, they raise you. And it becomes a very uncomfortable conversation of, well, how can I pay you back?
How do you quantify that with your dollars? Like, how do you draw that line in the sand with your dollars after all of the things they've given you that can't be quantified in money?
Because if it was just love, that's kind of like, sure, infinite, you can have all of it. But then, you know, it's not just the money. It's not like you're sitting there, like, rubbing your pennies together, like, oh, dad can't have this. It's, you have your own children to look out for. So, like, what the hell do you do when it becomes, like, little Timmy's college fund versus dad's elder care? And then you feel kind of fucked. I don't know. That's kind of what scares me. Like, the multiple pulls on, like, I only have so many resources in terms of, like, time and energy and money. Like, in the future, if I need to take care of my parents and I need to take care of my children, like, what do you do? That's scary. Yeah. I say this as a person with no children and who has, like, perfectly healthy, able parents.
But that's the point. That's what this comic does really, really well. It, because I think you're right. There's such a feeling of honesty in this and earnestness throughout this entire thing that it feels like Ross Chast hasn't held a single thing back in writing this. And I'm sure she has, but she's managed to get she's gotten the voice into this comic that every word I'm regarding as complete gospel for her experience, because it's like so relatable in every way. And not that I have a mother with a huge temper and a father who drinks tea all day, you know, I don't have those things, but like her parents have quirks and my parents have quirks. And you can kind of see how her parents' quirks, like, directly affected not only the way that they aged and deteriorated, but directly affected the way that that interacted with her relationship through that period. And it's like, then it makes you think about all of the quirks that your parents have and all the quirks that, like, for me that my wife has and my friends. And it's like, it makes you think about, for me at least, it made me think about death as a constant in life. And like, that hits some deep shit for a comic done by a cartoonist. So, wait, do you guys want to talk about the art, by the way? Because this is totally not, like, comic book art style. This is totally, like, cartoonist style, right?
Sure.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the interesting thing about, like, cartoonists is, well, not cartoonists as people, but, like, you know, those kinds of cartoons, like, that you would see in the newspaper or magazines and stuff, is the art varies wildly, you know, and it's more, I think, about the content. Cause you can look at, like, Gary Larson, who does The Far Side, or did The Far Side, or, like, you know, Calvin and Hobbes, or, or The Peanuts and stuff, and they're all different art styles, right? And, you know, I think that that art in a cartoonist, or in, like, a newspaper cartoon comic strip type of deal, I think it gives it, it kind of gives the voice and kind of sets the tone a little bit in the comic, too. I mean, typically they're pretty, they're all meant to be humorous, and I think that certainly is conveyed through the art in this graphic novel. You know, I think I'm trying to think, like, is there a better way that this could be conveyed visually? And, I can't think of anything. You know, I think this was appropriate for, you know, the whole package seemed to work well together.
Yeah.
The tone of the prose and the, you know, the art all seem to go well together. You know, it's not typical comic art, but at the same time, this isn't, you know,
this isn't a typical comic.
And that's fine. Like, if I think about some of the best graphic novels we read, like Underwater Welder, for example, that wasn't necessarily typical comic art either. It's just the art that, you know, I just think we can't look at this or judge it in the same way that we would, you know, a typical, like, Cape comic, because it's not trying to convey the same type of things.
Oh, yeah, no, it's totally different.
And so, what do I think of the art? I think it's good. If I had one complaint about this, is that sometimes I found this, the script, hard to read. But then I was reading the Kindle version also, so maybe if I had an appropriate size screen, it would have been easier. So that's not even really a complaint. It's more a complaint about my choice of devices. So
yeah, it is similar. But like the only thing that kind of got me was sometimes I was really humming along in this comic. This is the thing. Okay, I gotta say up front, any criticism I have for this comic makes me feel like such a piece of shit for criticizing a comic about a woman pouring her heart out over her parents' death. Like, this is not a criticism of the work at all. I adore this comic on almost every single level. But the only tiny, tiny thing is sometimes there would be, like, I'd be humming along and the art would be working with the text and it'd be great, and then I'd be humming along and I'd turn the page and there'd just be like a wall of just text, and I'd be like, oh, I mean, I could read a book. But that's like, it's more just of a pace breaker. And sometimes it really, really works. Sometimes you'd be humming along visually and it would be like she'd be taking jabs at her parents a little bit and making like loving little jokes and that kind of thing, and then you turn the page and you would get a wall of text, just like the handwritten notes, and it would not only slow you down as a reader, but it would slow your thought, and like you would really digest what she had written on the page versus when it's a comic and it just kind of breezes by you and it's fun. Which I think also is why those last couple pages hit home so well, is because you're so used to, in this comic, through the whole thing, is the cartoony bits kind of breeze by, and then when she wants to say something serious and deep, it's written. But those pages, she gets all of it across visually in a really simple, simple way that just works. And that buildup doesn't happen without that interplay coming before it. So I guess what started out as a criticism, I'm realizing worked really, really well in this comic, and I need to shut my fucking mouth.
It's okay to have your own opinion, Andy.
Yeah, well, no, that's the thing, is something that while you're reading the comic can feel frustrating or just different, or something that you wish was changed while you were reading it, when you go back and you talk about it and you think about it, you realize that that thing was there for a reason, and it worked in a way that you didn't consciously recognize while you were reading it. And this was one of those things for me. So, I mean, it's so weird. We've barely talked about the comic, but we've talked for over half an hour already.
Well, I don't know if there's like a ton of things to like say about the comic. That sounds totally wrong. There's a lot to say about the topic of the comic. Yes. And I think that's the point, you know. Like I forget, one of you said that this was cathartic I'm sure it was cathartic for Roz to write this, but it's certainly, you know, it's weird because this is informative. The title's perfect because, like we've said multiple times in this conversation, is this is something nobody wants to talk about, or maybe, I mean, people don't talk about it whether they want to or not. It just isn't something that is discussed until it's something that's right smack in your face. But what's interesting is this, you know, like we said, we're not in a position necessarily where we have to deal with this kind of thing with our parents. But it, you know, it's getting me thinking about this, and maybe it's good that I am, or maybe I shouldn't be thinking about it. You know, it's something that is going to come up eventually. And you know, I don't know. It's very interesting.
Well, let's rate this. Like I said, it's so weird to like do a rating for a comic like this when it's like, okay, Roz, I'm going to rate you on how you dealt with your parents' death.
Okay, like, I have a question before we rate it. What do you guys think about this since it's like a long-form comic strip? Or comic strip in like the funny pages in the newspaper?
Like that it's like funny pages kind of style?
Yeah, like do you think that it's that this style, I mean, obviously this one succeeds, otherwise, because we wouldn't be talking about it as a best of, but do you think this is something you would be interested in reading again? Not this comic in particular, but like, you know, see topics addressed in this form being... Yeah. A cartoonist way of doing like a long form.
It really needs a measured hand. And I think it really works well in this one, particularly because in the beginning, she's just talking about her parents and like the wacky relationship we have with her parents and her parents' quirks. And because we associate this style so much with jokes and playfulness, when you start reading and it's jokes and playfulness, then you get sucked in, and you're like, oh, this is ha-ha-ha-ha-ha, yeah, her parents are kind of weird, and it's great. And then the style doesn't change, but the topics change, and you realize that it's jokes and playfulness, but it's also, it's real life. Like, this art depicts in a way that makes you come into it and just have fun right at the gate, and draws you and sucks you in, And then when you're off guard, you realize this is her life, and it's life, and it's not going, the art style won't change. Like, life won't change just because her parents are starting to deteriorate and pass away. And I think if it were in a similar story, not necessarily about death, but I mean, that's what this kind of comic, like cartoony style, can really bring to a long form thing, is it can suck you in because it has such that immediate connotation. I think, like, comics like The Spirit and Batman used to be weeklies, and then they stopped because they weren't, that wasn't the right format for those stories anymore. But this format, like these, this cartoony style has persisted because it works so well there, because it does, like, associate immediately with haha, funny pages, you know? And if a comic can take advantage of that connotation that it'll get from page one, then yeah, I'll read it, because that adds depth to the story.
Absolutely. I mean, I think...
Nailed it!
Well, what you said about A Measured Hand is, like, so true, because it really... I don't think the style, like the artistic style, is going to be any kind of determiner in how, like, in what kind of story you should be telling. But I do think that you need to measure that style against, like, the tone that you want to set. And I think, you know, here, that cartoony style lent itself well to depicting neuroses.
No,
it's true. We saw, like, a lot, we visually saw a lot of neurotic behavior, but we had to read about grief, right? Like, she didn't really draw herself grieving. She didn't draw her mother grieving. She didn't draw the sad parts. And I think in part that's because she kind of knew that that style and grief maybe didn't mesh well in telling the story. 'Cause I can't imagine that specific style of art lending itself well to something like depicting such a negative emotion, because it kind of lightens the thing a little bit and makes it, you know, a little more pleasant to talk about. But I will also say, you know, if we look at things like Calvin and Hobbes, Peanuts, like, those are funny, and those are like weekly strips, but they also have some of like the most profound comic moments in comics history. So, like, I think that as long as you are careful about how you're using your art style in conjunction with the writing, you can tell any kind of story, whether it's very, like, light and happy or, you know, really profound and something, like, very heavy. You just have to weigh it properly.
Nailed it.
Woo!
Okay, let's rate this. I'll go first. I'm giving it a 5 because yeah, you can't like criticize something like this in a certain way, but also because it was really good, and I do have that feeling of like I want to give this comic to everybody, but this is something we don't talk about, so I'm probably not going to give it to anybody. But I want to recommend it, and I don't want to talk about it. I think if I'm going to force it on anybody, it will be my wife because of her job and all that kind of good stuff. But yeah, 5, just because it was really, really good. Jen?
I'm also going to give it a 5. I appreciate that it got me thinking about this kind of thing. Because, you know, as I said, my parents are still fairly young. Like, I don't... You know, they weren't, like, teen parents when they had me or anything, but they're... neither of them are 60 yet. You know? Like, they're still, like, really... You know, they're doing great, so it's not something I'm gonna have to worry about for a while. But at the same time, this is a thing that I've seen... Like... So my great-grandmother kind of went through this whole thing, and my grandma was very open talking about it, like, the whole experience and what it was like, you know, taking on that role of taking care of an ailing parent. And, you know, just thinking about that, I think, gave me really nice insight into like what my grandmother went through and like, you know, some of the important choices that we have to make in life that are just like, I don't know, like I feel like this is the kind of stuff that might blindside a person, and it's really good to just put it out there and say like, here's a thing and here's my experience. So, you know, even if it does come as a surprise to you, you're not alone. So I think it's valuable in that way. I don't know. I feel like I just rambled for a minute there. I really liked this.
That was a very good point.
Yeah, it was a well-told story, and I enjoyed reading it.
All right, David?
Yeah, I'm gonna definitely give this 5 as well. It was, I mean, it was very evocative for me. You know, like I said, it totally parallels what I saw with my paternal grandparents as they deteriorated and then passed away, and now, you know, seeing what my mom's going through currently with her parents, I want to have my mom read this, for the reasons Jen said, so she knows, like, you know, she's not, if she feels alone in this, she, you know, this could maybe help her or feel better about the situation. I know it's, you know, she definitely wants to help her parents out, in the best way possible. But I think at the same time, you know, I have 2 kids and my mom is a grandmother, and I know she wants to spend time with her grandparents, and she's trying to strike a balance. So, you know, this comic, it just, it's like watching my mom, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really, really good, and it's something that I think most people, like Jen said, everybody's gonna have to go through it at some point, so I think anybody could benefit from reading this.
So, all right, 5's all around, obviously, as if you didn't see that one coming. On the one hand, it feels wildly inappropriate to do a fight night. But on the other hand, we'd missed it last time, and like I said up front, we make a promise to our listeners. And, you know, it brings some brevity to this. Brevity, is that the right word? No. Levity?
Levity.
Wait,
levity.
Which one are you looking for? You levity. Want it to be short or funny?
Funny. I want to lighten the mood.
Oh, that would be levity. Brevity means you want
brevity
to be
shorter.
Short.
So it would be brevity if we didn't do Fight Night, but we're going for levity. All right. Let's fight. Fuck it. Let's do Fight Night.
Fight Night. Round 1.
This week's topic is most uncomfortable topic of conversation to have at a dinner party with acquaintances and second cousins. I really wanted to make this one weird. Because, you know, an uncomfortable conversation, but something that you would bring up in an atmosphere with people that you kind of know.
So, you know, you're trying to get the can we talk about something more pleasant reaction out of
exactly.
These people.
Okay. Without having it hit too close to home. So we can keep it weird. Jen, how about you go first, since you're in the lead?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Please.
I said I was prepared, but I lied.
You can take a second to figure it out. I'll cut this out.
Okay. So it has to be acquaintances. So, like, people that you don't really deal with, right?
People you've met but don't really deal with.
Okay. I think I'm good.
Okay. What do we got?
Okay, I'm going to go with something that has been everywhere on the internet recently.
Oh,
and say, no, it's not blue dress.
Thank God.
/ gold dress.
Oh, that thing. Fucking thing. No,
nothing's so stupid.
Thing.
Anyway, what you thought of 50 Shades of Grey. I just want to say, like, someone fucking pulled a quote from it, and in it, it said, "The elevator whisked me up to his apartment suite at terminal velocity."
That's like 10 meters per second, right? Terminal Velocity?
I don't think that means what you think it means.
Terminal Velocity is, I think, the, what is it? It's when,
it's when you can't fall any faster.
Yeah, mass, right. And your acceleration is, yeah. What
is
Andy
it
10 said.
Meters per second? I think it's...
I don't know.
That's about gravity.
I'm pulling,
Earth.
Yeah.
That's
I'm
about
pulling
Earth's
that
gravity.
Out of high school physics, which was like 17 years ago or something.
But it just doesn't apply to a metal box being pulled up by metal cables.
I think it's also a movie with where Wesley Snipes is a skydiver. Maybe that's what she's talking about.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean with that shit on the Facebook feed.
Round two.
All right, well, I think the obvious choice is strange but unresolved medical issues. Take your pick. Could be a strange boil on some part of your body. Some fluid is draining out of an orifice. Not necessarily a topic you want to talk about at any kind of dinner party, but especially with people that you don't know. It's like, oh, this spicy soup that we're being served during the second course is really making my medical issue flare up. So there you go.
All right, not bad.
Round three.
Mine, I have personal experience with in this similar situation, so this might have been cheating. But the topic of conversation would be the Survivor podcast that you co-host. Because I'll tell you one thing, there's two groups of people generally. People who listen to podcasts and people who watch Survivor. Because people who listen to podcasts listen to, like, The Moth and This American Life and Serial and generally these things with good production and story, which are the opposite of Survivor. And then there are people who watch Survivor who have no fucking clue what a podcast is. So this topic of conversation alienates half of the table on different things. And just nobody wants to talk because nobody wants to admit that they watch Survivor or talk about a podcast and sound super pretentious for the half of the people who have no idea what the internet is. Which is the older demographic that tends to be the people who watch Survivor. So that's my answer. Hosting a Survivor podcast. Outwit, outplay, outcast.com. All right, let's get votes. Jen.
Andy, that was a good plug, but I feel like you could at least, like, salvage that by being, like, you know, oh, tell me more about that, or explaining, because that's still, like, a fucking civil topic. No one is going to be like, tell me more about your colostomy bag. So David's got to win this one.
Oh, I don't know if David's got to win this one, because I'm voting for yours, Jen.
Okay, I'll take that.
David?
Man, I wish I could vote for myself.
Okay. I really did like Jen's answer, but mostly I feel like you took the cheap way out, so that's the other reason you're not getting my vote.
The cheap way out?
That's obvious! It's too obvious! You gotta fuck around some more. It's like why I shouldn't have won the alien one with Q.
You,
like,
said the
of course,
most
pick an alien.
Uncomfortable topic.
I don't know.
I don't think... Nobody cares about Survivor, Andy, so I'm gonna vote for Jen's.
But that was my point! Okay, fine. Another point for Jen. We're gonna run away.
I don't think it'll be uncomfortable. I think it'll just be uncomfortable for you for bringing up Survivor at all, and then everybody's gonna be like, right,
exactly. That's what I'm talking about. Okay,
not uncomfortable. That's just it's not.
Okay, all right. Let's get the scores.
Jen 5, David 3, Andy 2.
At least I didn't do jazz hands anymore.
Nobody can see the jazz hands.
Nobody can see the jazz hands.
Oh, all also, right. Terminal Velocity doesn't have Wesley Snipes. I don't know why I thought it had Wesley Snipes. It's Charlie Sheen. It's starring Charlie Sheen.
Those are totally different people.
I must have seen some
there's
other
like nothing
movie.
Nothing similar there. What's...
Well, there must have been a Wesley Snipes movie I saw where he's a skydiver.
Did he ever skydive during Blade?
I don't think so.
I feel like he would have skydived into a skyscraper to punch a vampire.
But I don't think he would have skydived. He would have just jumped.
Just jump.
Skydiving, I think, involves is like, by definition, has parachutes.
Alright, so that's it for this week. Next week, we're going to read Andre the Giant, Life and Legend by Box Brown. I'm really psyched for this one, because I hope it's not depressing, but it's Andre the Giant, so it might be a little bit depressing at the end, and we'll have read three depressing comics in a row. Yay, graphic novels!
Everybody will want to be interested in having a peanut at the end.
There you go.
Oh, it's called Drop Zone. That's the Wesley Snipes movie.
Okay.
It's a thriller.
What did you Google to find that? Wesley Snipes parachute?
Skydiver,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's starring Wesley Snipes and Gary Busey.
Oh my god.
Oh,
and somebody named Yancey Butler.
The one-sentence synopsis is, a tough cop teams up with a professional skydiver to capture a renegade computer hacker on the run from the law.
Look, they even
Oh my god! Both the Drop Zone and Terminal Velocity, they both came out in 1994.
That was 94 is all about that skydiving.
But I think Drop Zone is like the most 90s movie ever.
To catch a hacker?
What a renegade cop.
Oh my god.
That is.
Oh god.
But the Terminal Velocity one is equally bad. A maverick skydiver and a former KGB agent team up to stop the Russian mafia from stealing gold.
See?
Gold! Why? Who the fuck cares about gold?
Okay, yeah, we're done. Okay, goodbye, everybody. Good night.
Good night. Goodbye.
That went to a weird place. You know how Great America Rides are themed? Yeah. Do you think it was like themed after that movie?
The Drop Zone was.
What if that's the case?
The movies came out like 2 months apart. It was the year of skydive movies.
Who steals gold? Like, since when was that a concern?